Welcome to the Cashflow Champs podcast, the show where we demystify real estate investing so you have the tools you need to gain financial freedom through passive investments in real estate. And now your host, Cashflow Champs Managing Partner, Prashant Kumar.
Hey guys, this is Prashant Kumar from Cashflow Champs. You are listening to us on Cashflow Champs Real Estate Podcast. Along with me, I have my partner, Paul Sr., and we have an esteemed guest, Mark Kenny from Think Multifamily. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Prashant and Paul. I appreciate you guys having me on today.
Let me introduce you, Mark, formally. Mark is a seasoned real estate investor, coach, two-time best-selling author, and co-founder of Think Multifamily. He started his apartment investing career 25 years ago as a side hustle, working 80 plus hours per week in corporate world. He purchased about 18,000 units, totaling $1.5 billion in assets across 14 states. Mark has a desire to help others learn how to get started and go bigger with apartment investing. Mark is a graduate at Michigan State University in accounting and is a CPA. He also provided IT consulting for 20 years and leveraged his vast IT experience to bring new creative technologies that will help others in multifamily space. He has worked for organizations such as KPMG Consulting, EDS, SAP, HP, and founded Simplifying IT, which provided IT services to Fortune 500 companies. Mark, this is an impressive resume. You have worked with KPMG, EDS, SAP. I mean, I have worked with these companies also in my life. I have been an IT consultant, so I can relate to it, like, right from the bottom of my heart, you know.
Sure, you can.
Thank you so much for your time, Mark. I introduce you. Tell us a little bit about yourself, the unique background, you know, anything you want to tell our audience, if you don't mind.
Yeah, just real quick. I grew up in Michigan. I'm in Dallas, Texas now. One of seven kids, never really had any entrepreneurs in our family or my extended family. And it really, identical twin brother, Michael and I were young and we're both like, you know what? We don't like not having stuff. We don't like, you know, my dad having to work all the time. My dad having to fix everything that broke by himself and things like that. So we said, we're going to start a business. At that time, it was going to be a sporting goods business because we both liked sports a lot as kids. As we got older, we were in high school, college. We both said, you know what? They're both kind of analytical. People need a place to live. Why don't we start investing in real estate? Had no clue what we were doing. No idea whatsoever. No one to teach us. But we went and started looking. And senior year in college, we actually bought our first property. It was a three unit converted to back to a two unit, actually, to make it a little bit bigger on the one side. And I continue to buy small properties, 2 to 4 units, and actually start doing the math. I'm getting older. So it's about 30 years ago. That was 30 years ago, almost to the day that we bought that first property. And I was, as you mentioned, doing IT consulting as a CPA before that. And I worked, you know, 80, 90 hours every week. You know, I never had a day where I wasn't on a project in 20 years. You know, you can relate to the Prashant to the IT. Take it when you can get it, traveled a lot, caused a lot of issues just from a family perspective, didn't have a lot of time, or I had time, like everyone else, I just didn't use my time wisely, I should say. And yeah, my wife's kind of like, yeah, you know, you need to do something differently because this is not working out. So fortunately, we had been buying small properties together. We got married young. And I said, well, we need to start buying larger properties. I invested passively first. My first syndication was a passive investor through a SEP IRA that I had back in 2013. Then we started looking at doing syndications ourselves in 2013. And from there, we just started buying more and more properties. And then it evolved into a kind of a full-fledged coaching program as well. And we're in 14 states now, as far as where we own. It's basically Texas and the Southeast. So kind of a quick story, kind of how I got started and what we've been doing and continue to do going forward.
Mark, your story is exactly what I think I should have done 20, 25 years ago. I'm just 25 years late in doing what I'm doing right now.
Oh, you're only 25 years old, for sure.
Okay, I'll take that as a compliment. But I mean, yeah, to me, I mean, yeah, this is awesome. I mean, what do you think should be the right? What do you think should be a right age? When should folks get involved in?
Young. So, you know, fortunately, when we started kind of getting into syndication, my son, he just turned 18, actually just graduated high school a little early, which is good. We incentivized him, actually paid him to get done early. My daughter's a freshman in high school. I think they're never really too young. I think the issue you run into, which is what kind of made different generation a little bit too. My parents never shared anything with me financially. I didn't know how much my dad made, didn't know how much things cost, didn't really know any of the finances. At a very young age, I've shared things. And I tell my kids, you know, this is what it costs for this car, this is what it costs for the house, this is what it costs every month for these things. And then on the real estate side, our son's going to start working for us. He's not even going to college. Probably a whole different podcast. And I have a lot of opinions on that. But, you know, he's just going to work for us. And to me, the biggest thing I wish I would have known, I didn't know this was an alternative. So when I graduated, you know, back in the day, 25 years ago, it was kind of like everyone just went to college if you wanted to kind of get a decent job. Didn't really know about all alternatives. Yes, my brother and I were buying small little properties ourselves, which was good. We were at least active doing something, but had no idea about syndication. Never really dreamed at the time we could be buying 100 plus unit properties. So I think you share with what, you know, what your children can kind of understand or younger people understand. But I think you don't force it on them. You don't try to force them into be like you or conform like you. The fact is, my son's different than me in a lot of respects. Early on, I used to be like, why doesn't he more like me in this area or that area? He's a different person than me. You know, he's a mold of both my wife and myself combined together. The biggest mistake I think you can make is not sharing things with your kids. And I'm talking real hard, fast numbers, what they are and struggles that you have and mistakes that you've made. All those things. So most kids just don't know it's even an alternative. So they might conclude, hey, I saw that as an alternative. I still want to do a W-2 job or some other business. That's fine too. But at least get educated on it first, very young.
Oh, that is awesome. That's awesome, Mark. And I think that message needs to be spread even more. You know, I know when you were speaking, I mean, I'm reminded instantly of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, right? Right. And right. That's the type of mentality and philosophy we want to get out there. I mean, definitely teaching the kids when they're younger is the way to go. I got three younger ones too, and I'm starting to do that as well. I can see the impact it's kind of having on their lives already, even though they're very young. But let me ask you this. Your story is so fascinating and so interesting. And of course, you're starting a smaller space in terms of probably single family, duplex, whatever. But you are one of the bigger operators in the country right now. Kind of what was the path you took to kind of get from this smaller units into syndication, so to speak? And you know, what's the path you take to get there, and how can others kind of emulate that path?
Right. So I did invest passively first just because someone brought me an opportunity, a friend of mine. You don't have to start there. I think it's helpful. I think some syndicators will overplay how helpful it is to say, oh, you come in as a passive investor, you're gonna learn so much. And then you can go syndicate your own deals. That's about as far from the truth as you can possibly get. You're going to learn like 2% of what you need to know before you syndicate a deal. So right. It is beneficial. For me, it came down to, I had a big why, big desire. You know, hey, I needed to change because of, you know, family situation and things like that. But I think if you put yourself in a position where you have realistic goals, but stretch goals. You know, if you say, hey, my first year, I'm going to go buy 5,000 units. I mean, maybe, probably not realistic. But also don't say, well, I'm only going to buy a single family. There's nothing wrong with that either. But having goals, and at the end of the day, you know, I have a nephew that's super smart and is trying to get in the business, things like that. And his number one thing, I just said, you need to surround yourself around other people that are doing this. He comes down here, visits us, comes to all our events, coming down again here in a couple of weeks. And he's like, it's just so different in this environment from where he grew up and where I grew up, which is Owosso, Michigan, small town in Michigan. You're not exposed to things. So number one is being exposed to things. And then number two is just being a person that people want to do business with. If you're, you know, I don't think most people need to be told they're a jerk, but I don't know, people don't know they're a jerk. I'm too old now. I don't want to do business with people. They're jerks. I just don't. So being not a pushover, but being you know, kind to people, going out of your way to help people, learning the different ins and outs of it, try to go fast. I get that, all that, but don't go too fast in anything you do, because you can make too many mistakes doing that. But surround yourself around people that have already made those mistakes. I mean, I've done 119 deals as a general partner, and definitely have learned a lot of things that I knew, wish I would have known when I first started out. And I made a bunch of mistakes that I can share with other people that, you know, can hopefully avoid those mistakes. And you're not talking necessarily hundreds of dollars, $1,000. You're talking, in some cases, these mistakes can save hundreds of thousands of dollars, and in some cases, maybe millions of dollars over right. someone's deals. So that's the easiest way to get involved in meeting people. How to meet people, go to events, get yourself out there. You can't just be sitting at home. Someone's going to knock on your door asking to invest and things like that. Even as a path investor, you still need to put yourself out there to get to know people in the marketplace and ask around. Nobody's perfect, guaranteed, but ask around about people. It's a pretty small world, and you're going to get some probably interesting feedback from people.
So Mark, where do you think, I know you started in real estate, at what point did you get into syndication, and how difficult was it? I mean, did you have a mentor? How did you start that journey?
Right. So syndication, I didn't even know what it was until 2013, never even heard of the word. Yes, I went to an event, my wife to an event. We did have a mentor, some opinions on what mentors should do and what a lot of them don't do, unfortunately, about the sharing around things that you really need to know. But my biggest thing was I partnered up with somebody on my first deal. They already had some experience, and he had a bigger balance sheet than myself at the time. That's what allowed me to do it. So what value did I bring? Well, two main things. I was analytical, kind of CPA, and this particular person is not real analytical, which is fine. And then I raised capital, which I was, petrified to do and never done that before. And just from a background standpoint, it doesn't usually fit very well with IT guys and CPAs, but I was able to do that to contribute. So something of value to contribute to somebody else. But I'm glad I partnered up with somebody, because it allowed me to get a bigger property than I would have been able to get on my own.
So how are you helping others gain financial freedom, and what are the asset classes? I know you invest in multifamily. Are there other asset classes also? And how are you helping others? I mean, how are you bringing investors in your ecosystem?
So we do host events, multifamily events. We have a coaching program as well. And then we have, we're very active in the market. So we have typically a number of offerings that are available, and I'm a very straight shooter. I'll talk to an investor and steer them in position. If I was in your shoes, this is what I would look at. This is what I like about the deal, what I don't like about the deal. So being very, very transparent with investors about the deal and things like that. Asset classes. So before we picked multifamily, we did look at a bunch of other asset classes. So we looked at self-storage, which I like. But at the end of the day, I'm like, well, people don't need self-storage. I mean, we have one. Unfortunately, we pay a lot of money per month for ours, but theoretically, get rid of our stuff or move it into our house if we had to, right? We don't want to do that. Same with other things like hotels. People don't need hotels. So these are all good asset classes. I've invested in other asset classes as well. But multifamily to me served the need that everybody needs a place to live. Now everybody needs storage. Now everybody needs assisted living. Even those are, those are good areas as well. So I invested in some ER clinics. I've invested in just some other kind of random things, some IT businesses. I like cars a lot. So I invest in some cars, as an investment. I tell my wife that anyway. So yeah, it's an investment. So, but yeah, multifamily to me has been the most consistent asset class over time.
That's awesome, Mark. And you've been in this business at least from 2013. That's when you started syndication. And it's almost like a whole cycle, really. Not quite all the way, but we have seen some changes in the market since, especially over the past few years. At one point, you didn't know that the valuation was going to go out the roof, right? Just keep going up and up and right. up. And so, in terms of what you're doing now, are you still actively getting asset on the contract? Are you still actively doing transaction right now, or are you more on the sideline, kind of seeing how it plays out with the rise in interest rate and the cap rate? I mean, how are things for you now compared to like it was 2 years ago?
Yeah, it's much slower. So we're still active. I think you should always be active. Now, whether you execute and able to get something under a contract, you know, is a different story potentially. You know, you go back to all the podcasts I was on even during COVID. I'm like, we are super active right now. Don't know if we're going to buy or not. We did. We were able to get some deals where other people sat on the sidelines. I think that's a mistake for some people that year. We sold a lot of deals in, you know, 2020, 2021, 2022. But those are kind of the things we looked at. The volume has decreased substantially across the country.
Right.
And it's picked up a lot over the last, you know, month or so. We only have one deal under contract right now, unfortunately, but usually we'll have three or four at a given time. So this first half of the year is going to be really slow. That's okay. It really is. I think that, you know, if it does allow us to focus more on operations, which, you know, is now important and more important than probably it's been in a long, long time, through operations, efficiencies and things like that. So, but we're definitely active, but it's been very slow. And a lot of the deals coming out that seem to make a little more sense are ones that are loan assumptions. And some of the advantages, of course, you know, if it's fixed debt, maybe some interest only on it. You know, this whole concept of I'm going to buy this and, you know, this is what's going to happen. Nobody knows. Nobody knew, like you mentioned, no one knew before it was going to happen. We sold 21 deals in 2021, probably one of the best years you could possibly do it. Not because we're geniuses, just kind of like, hey, it made sense to sell, right? And we got lucky in some cases. So, but yeah, there's still a lot of deals being sent to us. A lot of it, there's still a pretty big disconnect between buyers and sellers. I think that's going to change because some people are going to be forced to sell. But the issue you run into right now, a lot of the deals can't cover their loan with a sale. That's the biggest issue you run into right now.
That's a very good point. That people would be forced to sell. And I want to go back to ask you the same question which I asked earlier. Where is the equity coming from? If you are getting into a deal and you are getting into deals every month, you know, a couple of deals that you said, and right now you have an active deal. Point is, do you raise equity from only common equity from private investors, or do you get it from family offices?
Right.
What are the sources? You know, I mean,
we try to get pretty much. So we did 160 million in just equity last year, which is a lot for us. You know, it's pretty small group. Mm-hmm. 30 deals in a single year. So a lot of ours are from the regular investors, and it's painful. We've done private equity several times. I'll tell you. You know, people think that, hey, it's the best thing ever. Yes, they write a big check, but they write a big check and they know it. And we've had private equity groups that have tried to retrade, meaning they try to change terms on us 3 days before closing, the day of closing. I actually kicked a private equity group out of a deal 3 days before closing because of them being jerks, frankly. So you beware. And I can tell you, if you have no experience, you might as well, don't even waste your time talking to private equity. If they act like they're interested in you and your deal and you're brand new, they're not. I can tell you're wasting their time and you're wasting your own time. So, but I would say about less than 15% came from any type of like private equity type functions last year. The rest was just from investors.
So out of 160 million, you probably raised about 140 million from common investors, you know.
Yes.
That is pretty awesome. That is pretty incredible.
It's pretty stressful.
that is true. That is true. So, I mean, the folks that who are working with you in your group, you know, are they becoming general partners? How do you structure your, inner circle, so to say? Is there one? I mean,
Right now there is one. We're in the works of some others. Right now there's one. That's what it's been from the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's truly people that it makes the most sense for people that want to syndicate, because a lot of the training is around syndications. I do all the one-on-one coaching. We don't have a sub coach model or anything right now. You know, as far as the group, we keep it relatively small, so people are active, doing deals, all things like that. The passive investor, could it make sense for them? It could, for sure, help them avoid mistake, but they would have to just realize that they're going to be learning a lot of other things or being taught a lot of other things that aren't really necessarily relevant, simply passive investing. But typically, it's someone that's active. Each person plays a role or multiple roles. Some people just do asset management. Some people just source deals. Some people just analyze deals, with the goal of people being able to work in those areas that they're good at and they like, and not have to work in those other areas that they're either not good at or don't like. And that's how we've been able to come together. Our group is called the Family Syndication Group, and the word family is in there on purpose. So people kind of, a good family vibe, right? But people working together as a family to help each other.
That is phenomenal, Mark. You guys have a big operation going on there. I'm just curious, in terms of, just to dig in a little bit, what type of database do you guys use in terms of, you know, reaching out to your whole database that you have? What type of CRM, rather, you use to reach out to your whole database? And kind of how often do you, like, reach out to them in terms of contacting them, just to keep engaged? Because, I mean, like, if you, well, you have a lot of deals going on, you speak of that, so I guess that's one way to reach out to them. But how do you keep them engaged and keep them interested and probably get repeat investor out of that? Because I'm supposing you're getting repeated investor out of your database and building that relationship.
The issue we run into a little bit, the amount of communication is never short, because we do the events I mentioned. We had so many deals, you know, it's good and bad. We would have a deal, we'd push out, let's say it was in Atlanta, and then 3 days later, we're pushing out another deal in Atlanta. And people are like, well, I'm confused. Didn't you just have a deal in Atlanta? Like, yes, this is a second deal. This is a third deal, whatever it might be. So for us, if we took the volume that we do, and let's take the coaching aside, I think if you reached out to your investor list, if you want to say, you know, I wouldn't probably do it every week. You can if you want to. One, it's a lot of effort. I would start probably monthly. I wouldn't do it less than monthly. But if you do a monthly update to investors, it's probably fine. That's in between doing deals and things like that. I know people that will say, I'm going to do a weekly, you know, newsletter to all my investors. And then it usually ends up being too much for people to handle. And then they just give up. So I would much rather see someone start. If you have to start with quarterly, do quarterly. And it doesn't have to be, people are like, I don't know what to put in there. Just put other people's stuff in there. Give them credit for it. And just like all the stuff going on with the Fed, all the stuff going on in the housing market, all the, you name it, right? You don't have to like create a bunch of content yourself necessarily to put something out. And then just let people know what you're up to. But I'm different than maybe some other people. I cannot stand when people are doing events and I get an email every single day. Now, we've done too much the other way, probably not enough. So we're trying to balance it, right? In some cases, you're still going to get people like unsubscribe and stuff like that, you know, but I would segment your audience. And you might send different things to different people, whether they're active investors already with you or they're not an active investor, you might end up sending different content to those different groups. But if you're just starting out, you could just use like MailChimp as an example for email communication. It's free. I think there's a paid version for it too. We use different tools and we use ClickFunnels and we use, you know, different tools like that. But starting out, you don't really need any of those tools in my mind.
So how big is the team, Mark? How big is the internal operations and what is the structure?
A group, people-wise in our group, this includes some spouses, like people that are members, when I say it's like 180, pretty small overall. The team, we're pretty small. We have, you think I would know off the top of my head, like 8 people or so. But like as of 6 months ago, we've been adding this year, we've added about 4 new people already this year. And we'll be adding a couple other people. And it's really through some, I guess probably harder times. Like we're like, okay, giving people chances, like people to asset manage, for example. Lesson learned, right? Someone has a W-2 job, it's really hard for them to asset manage. If they're going to be go look for deals, it's hard for them to asset manage. So going forward, I'm not doing any deals or partnering any deals where we don't have a full-time asset manager, 100% dedicated. We just brought on a guy over 20 years asset management that, you know, there we brought on. We bring on people for marketing, things like that too. We have people for IT. So we're getting a lot bigger than I probably thought we would, frankly, because we've been able to survive without it. But now we're at the point where this is a growth year, which is harder too, right? Because the volume's way down. So it's like you're spending way more money and less coming in, but that's just part of business. You know, you have to do it, and that's how you're going to grow your business and make it a better experience for investors, which, you know, we've been disjointed because of the way we are structured, and having different people do different things. And that's where, you know, in December, we had a board meeting, brought a third party consultant in, and we decided that going forward, we're no longer going to be disjointed like that. We have to have an umbrella where everybody falls under that. Right. And I've removed a number of asset managers, unfortunately, off deals, not because they did anything bad, just because they're not cutting it, essentially. So.
Awesome. So would you consider yourself a vertically operated? Is it a vertical integration going on with you
pieces
guys?
Right?
You guys
are vertically? Yeah. Pieces of it, like with the construction, the asset management. Yeah. Property management right now, we are not. There's some discussions about that with another group. We use and have used a lot of property management companies. You know, there are pros and cons of both methods, for sure. But that's probably the last piece that we are looking at more seriously now, about kind of rolling out under some sort of umbrella as well.
Got it. So Mark, you've been at this a long time. I mean, I know you've had some good days and some bad days. Tell us a little bit about what you think is one of your most favorite or best experience in this business so far.
Well, from a personal standpoint, it would be more around not paying taxes. So I haven't paid any federal income tax since 2016. And I had an IT business, I paid a lot. And then also kind of hand in hand with that, you know, just the amount of, you know, money we've been able to make from capital events, whether refinancing or selling properties, has been, you know, a good surprise, and still not paying taxes. Of course, I had to invest a lot of money last year to not pay any taxes. But that's kind of, and then from an overall perspective, you know, we started doing the coaching in 2017. Had no intentions of ever doing that. If you would have told me 10 years ago that's what we'd be doing, I would have been like, I don't think so. I had no desire at all. But really through kind of some circumstances that we went through, both my wife and I, you know, decided it's what we wanted to do. And now our friends are from the group. We do a vacation together and, you know, going to Florida. And then to see people in the group have some sort of, well, their first deal is always fantastic, right? Which is awesome. But then to hear people in the group that are either, you know, quitting their job, or their spouse is quitting their job, or both of them are. And I would say they're typically not going to sit on the beach and doing nothing. That's typically, you know, I could do that now if I wanted to, but I don't want to. Most people don't want to do that. But to be able to be in a position where you have the freedom, you don't have to ask permission. You know, my dad was sick a couple of years ago. I didn't have to ask anybody if I could go there. If I was doing IT, I probably wouldn't have gone. I would be looking back at that very sad. But I was able to go up there for 12 days, spend time with him. And, you know, I'm not trying to get political, but I'm, you know, also gives me the freedom not to have to conform to political mandates and stuff like that. So it's giving me, and then financial freedom to have my bills paid. If I want to go and do nothing, I could, and still have my bills paid.
Mark, this has been awesome recording. Basically, you know, it's an inspiring story. We are coming towards the end. Share your one personal habit that contributes to your success that you think will benefit others, you know?
For me, it's being consistent. So I'm into fitness a lot, not that you have to be, but I do think that people get so focused on money, which I did when I had an IT business and through childhood, and I was always fearful of not having money, that you ignore other aspects of your life. And it's easy to do. And I would just say, get into some good habits and routines. I typically go to bed about the same time every night, get up about the same time every, and I'm like, that's probably boring. I eat the same food every day. You don't have to do that. But I think getting into a routine, you will feel much, much better as a person. You don't have those days where you're like, I just feel off today, or something just is off. And I'm not saying you're never going to have a day you stay up late or something like that, but those routines for sure. And then being consistent, same place, same time. If you try to do different things at all different places, you won't stick with it. There's facts around that, you know, and how many days you have to do in a row and things like that.
In 1 minute, do you want to give a message to youngsters, you know, who has college going kids? Give them something valuable which you think will benefit them in their life.
Yeah. First, before I was going to mention something else about the younger, because I mentioned my son, he just graduated yesterday early. We incentivized him, you know, gave him money to get done early. So he's going to start working for us. But he, you talk about like investing, you know, we have people that just spend. So we bought him a vehicle when he was 16. He just traded that in about a month ago, got pretty good for something less expensive, took the money, he's going to invest it. So to me, I think for the young people, realize that there are alternatives. You don't have to just go to college. Not to say that you know, there's not anything bad with that, but, and this is going to sound bad, if your parents aren't successful entrepreneurs, then don't listen to them about being an entrepreneur. Find somebody else other than your parents. Most kids don't want to listen to parents anyways, but find somebody else that has done something successful, made mistakes, has had to pivot and learn from those mistakes, and let them teach you or, you know, share their experiences with you. But stop taking advice from people that have no business giving you advice. My dad's a perfect example. I love my dad. Fantastic dad. But, you know, I was listening to him about real estate, and every deal my brother and I looked at, we were in college, he talked us out of it. I had a contract, signed contract. He freaked me out. I backed out of the contract. I stopped listening to him. And then we went and bought a deal and told him we bought it after we closed on it. It was done. But that's the biggest thing, is surrounding yourself. You can be the smartest person in the world. You can be good with computers and talking to people, all those things. But if you're not surrounded around people that are doing and taking action, then that's the one piece you're missing, and find that group of people that you can actually connect with. And it's not always business. If you're going to do business with people, you better connect with them from an integrity, character. No one's going to tell you, hey, they lack integrity or character. I can tell you a lot of people in the business do. So don't be, as a young person, don't be like, oh, I can make money with this person. I know they're not necessarily a good person. I did that in IT. But a guy today still owes me $180,000 from, you know, 20 years ago in IT. And I stuck with that guy because I was like, oh, he's saying all these things, all the right things. He's going to give me part of the business. He's going to do all those things. And he's a crook. But I was, and he, I saw him cheat other people, and I still stuck with him. So don't do business with people that you have in your gut check, something's wrong with them, and or you know something that they did, and you think that they're never going to do it to you, never going to do it again. Find somebody else and do business with them.
How can our audience get to you? You know, what's
sure. The method? Email, it's Mark, M-A-R-K, at thinkmultifamily.com. Just reach out to me. That's the best way.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you joining us on the Cash Flow Champs Real Estate Podcast. Thanks for having us. Thanks for being here and being here with us, and just for sharing all the great information you did today. And best of luck in all that you do.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Prashant. I appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the Cash Flow Champs Podcast. Cash Flow Champs partners with busy working professionals and entrepreneurs that want to build and maintain generational wealth through real estate. Visit cashflowchamps.com to learn more about us.